Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today is Monday, April 10th, 2023, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we're at page 73, the third paragraph, Psychologists Are Inclined to Agree with Us, Ending Low Opinion of Alcoholics and Their Chance for Recovery. We're reading and commenting on that one paragraph only today. Today's readers are 12 Steps, Liz A., 12 Traditions, Bonnie T., Reader of the Text, Lois P., and Penny L. C. The reference number for Sunday, April 9th, 20, is 20,139. That's 20139. And for this morning, Monday, April 10th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 20,140. That's 20140. Our newcomer greeter this morning is Lorraine N., and Robin P. will do the announcements. Thank you to everyone. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I'll now ask Liz A. to read the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning, all. Liz A., compulsive overeater from California. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Liz A. I'll now ask Bonnie T. to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning. This is Bonnie T., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Chicago. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups, or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for letting me do service, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Bonnie T. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 73, the third paragraph. Psychologists are inclined to agree with us, ending low opinion of alcoholics and their chance for recovery. We're reading and commenting on that one paragraph only today. I will now ask Penny L.C. to begin reading.
Thank you very much, Dawn. Thank you for your service. Good morning, and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. Psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. We know but few instances where we have given these doctors a fair break. We have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. Unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men, we were honest with no one else. Small wonder many in the medical profession have a low opinion of alcoholics and their chance for recovery. And for me to apply this for myself, I had to realize that, you know, I couldn't be honest with myself. So how could I be honest with anyone else? As well, it was difficult to be honest if I didn't know the truth, my truth. I was so entrenched in my disease with the deception of my illusions and the false belief of my delusions. And then on top of that, along with living behind a plastic mask, I didn't let people really see who I was and what I was really feeling and thinking. So with all of that, there was no wonder why the times that I went to counselors or therapists or psychologists, that they were able to help. I can remember walking out once and totally dismissing what they told me. Just sure, I knew better. You know, there's my ego. But what happened? By God's grace, I came to this program and heard honest fellows that were working this program being honest about their histories, about their truth, about their present challenges, I was willing to do my part to start the step work. And then the big book led me to my higher power, which I wanted to point out happens to be today was the anniversary, the 84th anniversary of when the big book was first published. And what an honor to know that that book was written just for me, right? But for all of us also, to find a recovery. And to find, for me, my higher power, once I found my higher power through my step work, my higher power is able to lead me to know my truth. And learning to speak my truth when I discovered acceptance of it. So there was a journey ahead of me, and it wasn't going to work for me to be in a psychologist's office. It was going to work for me to be in this program and to read this big book and to learn the path of recovery. And I'm so grateful. Thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Penny LC, for your share. And I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to as well share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us this morning?
Bonnie B., Minnesota.
Bonnie B.
Wendy B., Arizona.
Wendy B. Okay, let's start with those two, and then we'll take some more names. Bonnie B., please go ahead and share with us.
Thank you so much. I'm just going to start my timer. Good morning, everyone. Bonnie B. from Minnesota. Grateful I recovered by the grace of God today for the next 20 seconds. So grateful to be here. Thank you, Don, for your service, and thank you, Penny, for that beautiful opening share. Honesty, yeah, didn't really get it. Even when I came into the program, everything within me wanted to be honest. It really did. But I was terrified. I was terrified of what people thought. I was terrified of what they would say. I was terrified of having to speak out truth. Right, because I came in with a strong faith, and as much as I had wanted to live up to those moral convictions, I had not. The idea of speaking that out loud to someone else was just—it was horrifying to me. And yet, that was the answer for me. That was the cure for me, was to be able to speak it out, knowing that my God had already forgiven me of those things. It was myself who was holding myself hostage. And every single time I believed one of those lies that I refused to speak out, my disease put me back into a closet with a baseball bat and convinced me to beat myself up and to lock myself in the closet. It's not my reality. Even being recovered, which is so interesting to me, even being recovered, my truth has got to be the truth that God drops into my heart. I have to listen to God. I cannot listen to other people. Even within this program, I gleam and I ask a lot of questions. But bottom line is, I know if God's speaking to my heart. When it comes to something as simple as my abstinence, you know, and I sponsor people and they'll say, you know, what should it be? I have no right speaking into their lives. This is my experience. But I will say, if you sit down and you ask your God to show you everything you've binged on, everything you've negotiated over, He'll show you, and then you'll know. And so that honesty is between me and God. And if I'm honest with God, and then I'm willing to share it with other people, I get by the grace of God to live recovered today. And then I have all these chapters, and these chapters, instead of being chapters that held me in bondage, they're now chapters that I get to share with other people that hopefully build bridges, because I'm no longer stuck in that closet. I'm out there now saying, I've got a chapter on that. Should I share my experience with that? And can I tell you how God showed up? Shame has been removed. And God has used that thing that gripped me with shame and now uses it to keep me free and hopefully to cause others that are new in this program, thinking that they're unique, to lean in, because they're not. And, we are blessed. But it is about being honest. It is about honesty, that rigorous honesty. And bottom line is, we know on the inside. And regardless of how we show up today, God still loves us. So I'm grateful for everyone that's here. Thank you for your service and a warm welcome to all the newcomers. You're in a really safe, amazingly beautiful place, and I will pass.
Thank you so much, Bonnie B. from Arizona. Wendy B., please share with us.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And that line where it says, we have seldom given these doctors a fair break. We have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. And many years ago, when I was in therapy with a counselor and occasionally I saw a psychiatrist, you know, for my depression, I really wasn't capable of telling them the whole truth. You know, I was still deluding and deceiving myself in just so many ways. But I also had an attitude like they couldn't really help me. I didn't trust them. You know, I was skeptical. I was just skeptical of the whole medical field, too. You know, I thought they only wanted to give me medicine to get me to keep coming back, you know, to spend more and more money. I didn't trust that they had pure motives and really wanted to help people. And there's a few passages in the Big Book that helped me let go of my prejudice toward them. And one of them was, I think it's in Working with Others, where it says, ministers and doctors are competent and you can learn much from them if you wish. And then another one, I think it's in Family Afterwards, says, God has abundantly supplied this world with fine doctors, psychologists, and practitioners of various kinds. Do not hesitate to take your health problems to such persons. Most of them give freely of themselves. And just absorbing those passages has just really transformed my attitude to one of appreciation, you know, for all the hard work and study, you know, that these doctors, you know, they discipline themselves to do in order to get their degrees and their titles, you know. And I believe now that, you know, God called some of them to their profession, you know, and he uses them mightily to help people. You know, and I get to honor and respect their position and their knowledge and their training and experience. You know, I also get to respect, you know, that I'm ultimately the authority over my own body, you know, and I don't give that responsibility over to them, you know, but I get to, you know, just humbly listen to their wisdom and their experience and be grateful. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Wendy B. from Arizona. And I made an error. I said Bonnie B. from Arizona, but Bonnie B. is from Minnesota. So thank you so much, both of you. And I'm now going to open up the line to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. And if you're just joining us, we're on page 73, talking about the third paragraph, where it begins, psychologists are inclined to agree with us, ending low opinion of alcoholics and their chance for recovery. So who else would like to share on this paragraph?
Larry G.
Larry G. Robin P. And hold on just a second. I had Larry G. Robin P. And who else? Whose voice did I miss who already spoke?
Justin B.
All right. Who is the gentleman's voice I heard?
Justin B.
Okay, Justin B. And what other voice did I hear?
It was Deb E.
Deb E.
And
Ida. Perfect. And I-O-A. Ida?
I-O-A.
Oh, I-O-A. Very good.
O-I-O.
Very good. All right. Fantastic lineup here. I have Larry G., Robin P., Justin, Deb E., and I-O-A. Very good. Larry G., go ahead and please get us started.
Thank you. My name is Larry G. I'm from California. Wow, the person who kicked us off this morning, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that. That was absolutely right on, spot on in terms of truth, little truth, big truth, selfishness, self-centeredness. Loved it. I'm putting my name in today. It's not my most favorite topic. Paragraph in the Big Book, although happy birthday, Big Book, right? It's not my favorite paragraph, but I'm in a lot of pain, physical pain. I injured myself, and the doctor doesn't quite know He's never had to treat this kind of injury before. So I'm going to get outside myself today and make calls, and that's the reason why I'm pitching. So if anybody on this call has used spiritual principles to recover from a physical injury or some kind of disorder, I'd love to hear from you. You know, this is the reason that I think most people will fire their therapist, CPA, attorney, you know, sponsor, especially sponsors, right? We want to pitch it in a way that, we have a personality conflict here, or this is not a good fit. And the reason we fire our sponsors or we fire our therapists is because of this reason. Here, we don't want to hear the truth. We want to hear our truth. Anytime I say, well, this is my truth, right? Immediately, that is not the truth. That is the truth with a small t. There's only one truth, and that's God's truth. That's on the spiritual path we find what is the real truth. I had recently saw a therapist, very different from any therapist I've ever seen before, cognitive behavioral therapy. Not much of a personality, not much of a, you know, not warm and fuzzy like the therapist I had in the past, but this woman let me have it right between the eyes and a couple things. I did not want to hear it. Now, I've been in program a long time. I do steps every single year. I have a sponsor, right? I did not want to hear it. And I came home complaining to my wife about it. And man, she said, that sounds like this woman is right on. Maybe you need to listen to her. And I did. And I would come back the next day, the next session, wanting to fire this person because I didn't want to hear the truth, right? And it works really well for me. Why would I want to hear the truth, especially early on in recovery, right? I want people to buy into my truth. My truth with a small t, because that's what it is. My truth is a small t. The real truth is God. God is the truth. And anything less than that is just me imposing my will, my self-centeredness, my dishonesty. And thank God for those therapists in the past who told me the truth, right? That had a spiritual connection between what they were saying and the reality of the situation. So anyway, I don't know if I'm making sense or not. I'm in physical pain right now. I just want to get outside myself today. And this is, I think, the way to do it, right, is to get outside myself and be of service. So anyway, Larry G., California, third sober Easter. Yay, third sober Easter in 20 years and over years in arms. Third sober Easter. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you so much, Larry G. from California. Robin P., followed by Justin. Go ahead, Robin P., star one.
Thank you. Hi, this is Robin P. I'm very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater in Costa Rica. And the call just dropped, and I just got back on, so that worked. I saw a therapist when I was in the disease and talk. It didn't help because I was talking from a place of denial. It's such a disease of denial. And until I was abstinent, it wouldn't help me. I felt like I had some enabling psychologists. And then I did find some therapists who did body work, and that helped. And it was all a process. But the main thing that's helped me is working the steps and working with others and, you know, getting honest, open, and willing on being abstinent. And, you know, once the food gets – and I've also been to nutritionists who, you know, pushed animals eating – I don't eat animals. I'm a gluten-free vegan. And I've also been told, oh, you have to – you know, don't worry, you have to eat sugar. You have to eat just balanced, just moderate. You have to eat gluten. And you know, I think that it's take what you need and leave the rest and keep finding the doctors that resonate and the psychologists that resonate. And I actually don't see a psychologist or a nutritionist today, but if I did, I would definitely find one who was 12-step oriented, because I think that, you know, there's some that are trained in one respect and some that are trained in a different respect. So I totally understand this paragraph. It's not my favorite paragraph either, but I totally understand it. And I think that, you know, when we were in the disease, no one could help us outside of God. And so we were just really desperate enough to go to any lengths to recover. And then we could get the help that we needed. So I'm very grateful to be abstinent today. I'm so grateful for A Vision for You. It literally saved my life. And, you know, over 7 years ago, one day at a time. And I have the life of my dreams today because of this program. So God bless everybody with a really blessed abstinent day. Thank you. Pass.
Thank you so much, Robin P. from Costa Rica. Justin, please share with us, and followed by Deb E.
Hey, good morning. This is Justin B. I am living in the state of Washington and gratefully living one day at a time in the state of recovery. What a beautiful thing to say, be able to say that and experience that. The sentence that sticks out to me is one that's been commented on a couple times, but my take may be a little bit different, maybe not. We have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. You know, why would I follow the advice of some person who has a piece of paper on their wall when I can look at Dr. Google until Dr. Google no longer agrees with what I think is right? You know, I believe that I am the source of all wisdom and knowledge and health advice about myself. Well, as I look at back at my life, you know, 45 plus years of doing it my way, what did that get me? It got me in a lot of trouble health-wise, emotional-wise, spirituality-wise, because I am not the source. You know, I kept looking for, wanting to live in the echo chamber, whether that echo chamber was, you know, for my physical health with food, whether it's for my, you know, spiritual health with religion, whether it's for my, you know, whatever it may be. I just want people to tell me that I'm right and tell me that, and believe the same thing I believe. Politically, all of those things. That's the thing. And what is beautiful is stepping outside of that echo chamber and getting in other echo chambers. Heck, even in recovery, I can easily get in the echo chamber and just say, hey, you know, that's the way that the 12 steps should be worked, and I'm only going to listen to that. I love the concept of finding something that is good, that is virtuous, that is lovely, that is praiseworthy, and seeking after that. And even if it seems to step outside of what little echo chamber that I want to live in, that I want to be fed the same things that I believe. But, you know, if and when I listen to those who have experience that I do not have and try and apply the good in that into my life, it opens up that echo chamber. It becomes so much bigger. And I'm then standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon seeing the beauty rather than in a teeny tiny acoustic room where with voices screaming at me. I can then hear and see and feel the beauty of the grandeur of my higher power and of that higher power's creation of others and their insights. Anyways, that's kind of what I gained from that. And with that, I will pass. I'm Justin, still a compulsive eater, but in recovery.
Thank you so much, Justin B. from Washington State. Deb E., please share with us, followed by IOA, and then I'll be opening up the line to take more names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. We are on page 73, the third paragraph. Psychologists are inclined to agree with us, and we're reading on that one paragraph and commenting on that one paragraph today. Deb E., please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. And it's been great listening to the shares so far. I kind of got lost in what everyone was saying. But what it makes me think of is how, you know, my first course of action when I realized, like, when I hit bottom and I was desperate for a solution was to look up psychologists in the phone book and see who was specialized in eating disorders. You know, and I had a list I'd copied out of the phone book, like a list, like 3 pages worth of names and phone numbers, and I'd sit in my car on my lunch break and just call them. And my initial experience was that I went to see someone and she just didn't get it. Like, she just couldn't understand me. And so when I found OA like about a month later, I just felt like I was home. Since then, so I haven't ever had the experience where I've had seen a psychologist that has spoken to one that really gets my eating disorder. However, I have talked to quite a few therapists at this point who've really helped me with all the underlying issues. You know, they might not get the food stuff and why I did, you know, did what I did with food, and they might not be able to relate to that if they don't have that experience, but they have been able to help me understand why I acted the way I did in my disease, and that's been really helpful for me. And the other thing this paragraph makes me think about is how the program has really helped me to be teachable. As much as I would have liked to think that I was teachable before, I really don't think I had much room. You know, I had this automatic reflex that, like, well, I know. Like, you don't have to tell me I know. Even though if you had asked me at the time, I wouldn't have told you I know everything. If I was confronted with that question, I would have said, of course I don't know everything. But the way I was acting was that I did know everything. And one of the best parts about having close contact with my higher power is that it's constant proof to me that I don't know everything and I don't need to know everything. You know, my higher power has all the answers and they're doled out to me in the time that is right. And sometimes I don't get the answers because I'm not privy to them. And, you know, I can get frustrated with that, but I know my higher power's way is always the best and it always turns out the best. And so even though I can get frustrated and stuck in those moments where I either want to know something or I'm impatient for an answer, I need to just wait and remember that that guidance will come. And I'll pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deb E. from Israel. IOA, please share with us.
Hi, good morning. I'm IOA from Southern California, Irvine. Grateful compulsive overeater. And I just want to share, every therapist I've ever gone to, I have not told that I have an eating disorder. I think in my mind, I am, as a, you know, 100-pounder plus, I have always wanted to save the option of getting the bariatric surgery. And somewhere I heard of disorder, they wouldn't want to do it. So I would talk about depression, trauma, but I have to say that my experience is the fourth and fifth step have immediately required that I pull back layers that I have never addressed in therapy. And I'm not saying they don't have the tools. I'm certain if I had that I have an eating disorder, we would have went right to the food. But the other thing is I hear people talk about emotional eating. Emotional eating has actually become so common that I don't have shame of, you know, joining in and saying, yeah, I'm an emotional eater. But I had a lot of shame about saying I'm mentally and bodily different, right, that I am a compulsive overeater and that I'm, you know, really different from other people when it comes to food, and that I use it for some things that other people just kind of seem to know how to do in life. So what my inventory did was really ask me very specifically about resentments, where I thought, okay, I can write those. But one of the things that happened to me in this process that's never happened to me in therapy is, instead of just being able to say how I reacted to the resentment and why I was angry at the person, my sponsor asked me to look at what my part was. And that's something that's never happened to me in therapy, where I told them what I was angry about and they asked me what my part was. I've always been asked, well, what did you do? How did you react? But this layer of getting to my thinking, my fear, my wanting everyone to be perfect, even though I can't be perfect, my manipulation and dishonesty, my people pleasing out of fear, all of that comes from me looking at, well, how did I get into this this entanglement in the first place. Like, I'm resentful, but what is my part? What led to this? And I have found that I'm in other people's business in ways that I shouldn't, and that's never come up in therapy, that I think things and say things and offer my opinion on things, and then I'm pissed off at people who don't take it or do what I want them to do.
Time.
So anyway, I want to thank everyone for being here at the meeting. Thank you for letting me share, and I'm so grateful that this program, you know, requires us very quickly to get into something that that I've just never experienced before. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, IOA from California. I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to share in this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share on page 73, the third paragraph, psychologists are inclined to agree with us?
Danielle W.
And who is that other voice?
Noelle J.
Noelle J. Who else would like
Amy
to share?
Amy W.
Amy W.
Susan B.
Who is that, B?
Irene B.
Irene B. And who is the other? Say again.
Susan B.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much. Susan B. Very good. All right. We'll stop there. Danielle W., Noelle J., Amy W., Irene B., and Susan B. Danielle W., please share with us and let us know where you're calling from if you'd like.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Danielle W. in Southern California. Recovered, but not cured. I had gone to therapy. I've been going to therapy for a very, very long time. And I still go, and I find great value in that. I come from a very abusive childhood with a lot of sexual trauma. And so, you know, my life was affected by those things. But often, for quite a long time, I felt like in psychology, I was just kind of, I didn't feel like I was really healing as much as I wanted to. And then I found this 12-step program. And I found a community. And I found that I wasn't alone. I always thought like I was one of the few. And the sad truth is there's a lot of people that have been harmed in their lives. But what's been really interesting for me over the last couple of years, as my faith has grown, as my spiritual awakening and my connection to my higher power has strengthened, my therapy has changed because I bring God into it now. Sometimes it's hard to find the right therapist or to find the kind of therapy that I needed. You know, I did talk therapy, but then I really needed to do some trauma work. And now I look to God to help me find the right people. And sometimes, well, not sometimes, every time I go into a session, I bring God with me. You know, I do the set-aside prayer, and I bring God in to help me to have the courage to look at things I need to look at, to see things clearly, because part of my disease is to kind of be delusional, and to ask for healing. And it's a beautiful, it's sort of a beautiful relationship between my 12-step work and my therapy now, in that I can be fully present and honest in a way that I couldn't be before. It's saved my life, if I'm going to be perfectly honest. And I'm excited now and hopeful that I can continue on this path and that I have these opportunities to continue to grow and heal, and most importantly, to further my relationship with a power greater than myself. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Danielle W. from California. Noelle J., please share with us, followed by Amy W.
Hello, I'm Noelle J., recovered, but definitely not cured. Grateful to hear that this morning. This is a great paragraph. Wow. Not really wanting to share on this line, but I'm grateful to hear that. In my experience, I remember being a young person, and in hindsight, I recognize now that I was living in a very abusive situation. I was being sexually abused by my father at the time. But when I was young, I gained a lot of weight very quickly, and my mother was very concerned. And I think, you know, she did the best that she could, and with the tools that she had, she just kept taking me to the doctor, kept taking me to the doctor, kept taking me to the doctor, kept taking me to the doctor. And there were definitely, again, in hindsight, there were definitely signs that something was going on, but the doctors seemed to be just as confused as my mom was. And for years, I would go to the doctors, and the doctors would just say, you know, you're overweight and you need to lose weight. You're going to die. You're unhealthy. You need to do something about this. But they never, in my experience, and I also was in the food at the time, but I never really remember a doctor giving me any advice or like saying, this is what you should do. And I remember coming into program and having to work through a deep, deep resentment of doctors and physicians and therapists, because recovery was the answer for me. 12 steps was the answer for me. I'm an addict, which is something that I guess my doctors weren't able to identify or point out to me. It was something that, you know, of course my higher power had to do that work. So I came to 12 step and really got what I needed from that part of the program. And now in my experience with doctors and my experience with therapists, I'm much more able to receive the information that they have to give me. Because everything is in order, right? Higher power has an order for things, and things are in order. So I've recognized today that the things that I get from program are not necessarily the things that I'm going to get from a therapist or a doctor, but that doesn't mean that there's not a place for both of these things in my life, which I'm really grateful for today, because working these things together, especially as a, you know, like a trauma survivor, it's important for me to have both aspects of that in my life and in my healing and my growth.
Time.
I'll leave it at that. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Noelle J. Amy W., please share with us, followed by Irene B.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Amy W., recovered in California. Thank you so much for your service. And it's just a beautiful morning to hear everyone share and to be on the line in fellowship with you all. What stands out for me this morning is the sentence, unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men. We were honest with no one. And boy, anything that starts with unwilling, I'm going to land in some hot water. And looking at this fifth step today, when I do a 10th step, I'm doing a fifth step, a 4 through 9. And I just look at where am I unwilling today? What am I unwilling to do or think? Maybe I'm being intolerant about something or judgmental about something or perhaps angry about something, and I have the opportunity to be willing, and then the opportunity in my willingness to be honest. I know a very recovered AAer who's since passed discussed the golden key with honesty, honest with myself, because if I'm not honest with myself, I'm not honest with anybody. And sometimes, you know, I get embarrassed by a certain 10th step, like, do I really feel that way? It's like, I really do. Dang it. To do this work. And then even look at the embarrassment as these kind of reflections of ego and do the work and share it with another human being. And that language of the heart helps me heal and helps a real connection with my higher power. And even though it's sometimes not pleasant or uncomfortable, the willingness is there, which I'm grateful for today. And recently, you know, I am seeing actually a psychologist. It's been so helpful. you know, I used to hate it because, and same with nutritionist. I have a nutritionist today and it's very helpful. I'm not going to them for my food addiction. You know, I used to be that I would go to them for answers for my food addiction that the people I saw couldn't answer. This fellowship answers that. This 12-step program answers that. This relationship with a higher power answers that. But today I can go to a psychologist and really, it helps. It's helping me. It's a difficult time in my life. And it's helping me see more clearly, connect with another human, and I who's a professional in their field, and I enjoy it. Lastly, I remember when I was in the food and pregnant for the first time, I was eating. I didn't stop eating. I gained 100 pounds, which, let's be honest, 30 might have been the baby, but, you know, 70 pounds in 10 months. And I was bawling my eyes out to the OB. Yes, you've got to help me. You know, and there's nothing she could do with my food addiction. And it was so painful.
Okay.
And I knew that, and she knew that, but here we are today. We have an answer to our problem, and it's just beautiful. So thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful day. I pass.
Thank you, Amy W. from California. Irene B., your turn to share, and unfortunately, Susan, I don't think we're going to have time for you to share, so please come back tomorrow and share with us. Irene B., please take your turn.
Hi, good morning. It's actually Irie D, like David, and no N-E at the end.
Okay, I'm grateful, very good.
And I'm from Florida. I'm a grateful recovered food addict, recovered for today, and my name is Irie D. I wasn't unwilling to be honest with these people or anybody else. I was just not capable. And, you know, from the doctor's opinion on, they start talking about honesty. And, they tell me I'm in full flight from reality. And then in how it works, the book tells me, there are those two who are capable of being honest with themselves. And my honesty with myself begins with being honest about who I am as a real compulsive overeater. And that needs to remain, for me, the basis of all the other honesty that I can face. I can face the honesties I need to face in step four, and then on a daily basis, multiple times a day, on step 10. But I am incapable of doing that if I am not honest about my food. And I'm not honest about the fact that there are certain food ingredients that I cannot have in safety. And there are certain behaviors around food that I cannot do in safety. And then I'm able to be honest and I'm able to let my higher power come in and guide me through my life and through my relationships with other people. And everything else gets better. But it for me, it has to begin with that first kernel of honesty, of being honest about who I am as a real compulsive overeater. And then I get to be honest about my selfishness, my dishonesty, and everything else. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Irie D. from Florida. And again, my apologies, Susan B. Please come back tomorrow. We would love to hear from you. We're now going to close the meeting with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Lois P. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Thank you, Dawn. Good morning, everyone. This is Lois P., gratefully recovered in New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.